Okay, Shalom Aleichem, Guten Tag. So we are in Chavos Halvavos, Shar Avodas Elokim, Perek Hey. We haven't learned for a couple of weeks. Baruch Hashem, it was on an account of a simcha in our family. I very much appreciate everybody's well wishes, Yashav Koyach. We should, Bezos Hashem, continue to share only simcha and good health. To go back to what we were up to, it actually works out well, because the Chavos Halvavos, what he's actually doing in what we're up to now, is kind of, in a way, giving a recap on what the whole Sefer is about. To briefly recap where we stood last time, the Chavos Halvavos introduced to us a new twist on the whole approach to our service of Hashem. And that is, in short, be a mensch. What did we mean by that? What we meant by that was, if you appreciate everything that Hashem is doing for you all the time, then, and if you're really conscious of it, if we have gotten to where the Chavos Halvavos has been trying to get us up till now, of learning to sense everything that Hashem is doing for us all the time, learning to feel it and to appreciate it and to live with that reality, then he says, then simply think in terms of Bein Adam L'Chaveroi. Don't think now in terms of piety, etc. Think in terms of Bein Adam L'Chaveroi. If you had showered somebody else, this isn't possible, but if you had showered somebody else with all the good that Hashem showered you and is showering on you all the time, how would you expect that person to relate to you? If we appreciate everything that Hashem has done for us and is doing for us right now, everything about our body functioning and everything that includes, and everything about our life reality, our family, all the bracha that we have in our lives, which the Chavos Halvavos has been trying to train us to see throughout the previous Shara Bechina, he says, then you should relate to Hashem. It's a matter of decency that you take his desires seriously and that you relate to him in a way that you would expect somebody who is bound with gratitude toward you to relate to you. And then the Chavos Halvavos is going to go on to actually spell it out. Now, I'm not going to read through it. If you want, I'll give the place. We're in Shara Avodas Elokim Perek Hey. In my Leib Tov edition, it's page Resh Mem. It's Omar HaSeichel HaInyanim Sheim Tovim. If anybody has the English place, I'll ask you perhaps unmute yourself for a moment and just tell us what page it is in the English.
298.
Thank you. Yashar Koyach. 298 in the English. I'm going to kind of move over it without reading it inside, but I'm going to move through what he says. He is describing here a dynamic, and that's what we have to understand. Our relationship with Hashem is really about a live dynamic. Everything that stems from a very, very clear sensory awareness of Hashem and of his place in your life. In other words, I'll elaborate a bit. We're often told that you should live your life as though you're in the presence of a great king. Live your life as though you're in the presence of a great king, which is, of course, a feeling of awe, even a certain feeling of fear. You don't want to anger him. And that's all true, but the Chavos Halvavos wants to add another dimension to that dynamic. You want to live your life in the presence of a great king who has been caring for you intensely and personally and is constantly showering you with good. Now let's try to picture that. Let's try to picture that. Imagine, okay, let's talk our terms. We'll talk the United States, even though it's not such a great example for a number of reasons. Really, we should talk about a land with a proper monarch. But let's take the United States, just because happens to be that's where I grew up in my formative years. And you're living wherever you live. Take my case, living somewhere in Brooklyn. And then you suddenly get a letter from the president inquiring about your welfare, inquiring about whether there's anything he can do for you, anything that you need, any connections that you require. Financially, legally, etc. And for whatever reason, you don't understand it, but he's taking a personal interest in your life. And you say to yourself, okay, look, here's an opportunity. And you write back to him. You write back to him about different health issues, about different financial issues, etc. And what he actually starts doing is, you don't understand it, you don't know why, but he really begins providing for you, caring for you, seeing to all of your different needs on a regular basis. Presumably, you're going to become a fan of that president. He's going to have your vote next time, right? You can become a fan of that president. Now, the problem with this mashal is that when it comes to a president, when it comes to the United States in general, we completely lack the dimension of awe. Awe, reverence, is something that American society has done away with a long time ago, the whole concept of reverence in general. So that's why it's a little bit of a tough example to use. But if we'll also draw on other realities in order to try to bring this point home. Rav Moshe Feinstein, you know, it's famous that there are two approaches to davening. There are the shucklers and the non-shucklers. I think that the non-shucklers are less common because just physically it's more difficult to daven without shuckling. Sway while you daven. Now, both have merit in halacha for different reasons. There is the approach that make a point of swaying when you daven because you want to involve your whole body in the tefillah. All of my limbs, all of my bones, every part of me should be expressing my praise to Hashem. And that's part of the idea behind swaying when you daven. The idea behind not swaying when you daven, which is again, it's rarer because it's just more difficult to do. You stand stock still because that's how a person would stand if he was actually standing before a monarch, if he was actually standing before a king. You stand immobile. You even say afraid to move a muscle. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said that he originally would chuckle. And then there was one time when he was brought in for an interrogation this was already not under the czars, it wasn't the monarch, but it was the commissioner or whatever it was, the head of the police of his area. This was an immensely powerful person who, quite literally, standing before him with the wrong move, you could find yourself, you could find your head off, or you could find yourself in prison for 50 years. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said that when he was standing before this person, he stood stock still, unmoving. He didn't move a muscle. And he said that experience, he came away from that experience with more of an appreciation of what it means to be oimid b'fnei ha-melech, after having that experience. And he transplanted that experience into his tefillah. He said that since then, he wouldn't move in his tefillah. So we're talking about creating a bit of a complex dynamic. We're talking about a monarch, Kol Yochel. When we talk about Hashem, You have to realize what the significance of it is, that you're standing before Hashem. You're standing before the one who you have billions of malachim who are quaking and shaking in his presence. And whatever this means, I don't know what this means, but I'm going to say the words. These are the words that it says in the Sfarim. You can have malachim that are 500 times the size of our world. Again, don't ask me exactly what this means. I'm quoting. My understanding is as good as yours. And then it says that these malachim stand in the myriads before Hashem, and they are in such awe of the grandeur of Hashem that they are sweating rivers of fire. That's what the Sfarim tells us. They're sweating rivers of fire. And when you're talking about a host of these malachim, our earth is a speck would be an overstatement. A speck would be an overstatement. And nevertheless, Hashem is looking down from on high, and he is finding you in that tiny speck. If you think of earth as a speck, so what is a single individual on earth? But yet Hashem is singling you out, focusing on you, and taking a very personal interest. And in fact, you interest him more than all those myriads of malachim. And he is going to be on top of your portfolio, kiviyochel, so to speak, in a very personal way. Hashem has a personal interest. Hashem, mimkaim kadshai, from up on high, above all those myriads of malachim, has a personal interest in your heart beating. Now you'll ask me, 1 minute, there are millions of human beings. What's so special about my heart being beating? The truth is, there are millions of animals, mammals, fish, insects, all their hearts are beating. But it is not the same. With the rest of the world, it is not something personal, so to speak. This is a deep subject. I'm not really going to get into it now. But Hashem has systems of what we call teva that govern these things. When it comes to the Jewish people, this is Hashem holds that in his hand. This is my personal, so to speak, this is my personal responsibility. I care for these people directly because each one has its own individual, its own individual matter of interest for me. And therefore, you may seem that your body is operating the same as any other human being, and that your life, you have your own life story, just like every human being has his life story, but it's not the same. Your life is being hand-tailored by Hashem, both in terms of the most basic functioning of your life and in terms of your life story. It's being conducted in a very, very personal way by Hashem. And that interests him more than all those myriads of malachim who are so much greater than our universe. Hashem is focused on you. And what does Hashem want? What Hashem wants, how do we understand this? It's beyond us. But Hashem has pleasure and nachas from a personal live dynamic with you, from a personal live relationship with you. And ultimately, that's what he wants. That's what he wants from you. He wants you to live with him in the same live, real way that he lives with you and that he's focused on you. And everything else, all the mitzvahs, all stem from that. And what he does here is basically describe that dynamic. And again, I'm not going to read it in Hebrew, but I'm going to move through it, translating it in a general way. So it really starts with awareness. He wants you to live aware of him. He wants you to spend your life with him. He's focused on you. He wants you to be focused on him also. Now, a true awareness of Hashem will have different consequences, different things will stem from it. So first of all, if you actually realize that you are standing in the focus of that Hashem, of the Ribon Kol Olamim, the one who has all the malachim shaking and quaking before him, and he is intensely focused on you personally. So first of all, a natural dynamic of that is that you act humbly. You act humbly. You act in a submissive way. You don't walk with your nose in the air. This is important to understand. Humility is one of the greatest midas that there are, but it's often not properly understood. Humility does not mean convincing yourself that you're a nobody. Convincing yourself, being aware of your lacks, etc., being aware of your faults, etc., is an aspect of humility, but that's not the essence of humility. The essence of humility is something very sublime. It isn't just convincing yourself that you're a nobody, and on the contrary, you're not supposed to believe that you're a nobody. If you're a nobody, it would be sacrilegious to think that Hashem would have such an interest in you. You are a somebody. The fact that you mean so much to Hashem already makes you into something very, very special and high. But what humility means is, it means that if you are very keenly aware of the fact that you're in that presence, that you're standing in Hashem's presence, how could you feel haughty? You'd be embarrassed to feel haughty, especially when you realize that, again, your thoughts are on the table when you're standing in Hashem's presence. I've given the mashal about that a few times. I've probably said it here. I'll repeat it again, just because it's very fundamental in order to understand this properly. This, by the way, was why Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest anav of all people, because he was, perhaps in history, the man who lived with the greatest sensory awareness of Hashem. When he was always standing with Hashem right over him, he always felt humble. So the mashal that we've given for that is that, let's say you have, bear with me if you've heard this before, but it's worth repeating. Let's say you have a few people waiting in the waiting room of a multi-billionaire, a big philanthropist, very generous man, and he has hours that he sees people are simply coming to solicit his help. And there's a number of people waiting in the waiting room. None of these people, all these people have their financial difficulties, and they're all waiting for their chance to have an audience with this man and to lay out their case. And, okay, you have Moshe and Yankel are each waiting their turn. Moshe goes in first, and he sits down in front of the philanthropist, and he says, "My financial situation is difficult," lays out his whole story. And the man says, You know what? I want to see you doing well. Here, hands him $500,000. Hands him $500,000. Oh, wow. All of a sudden, Moshe is a rich man. Before Moshe manages to leave, in walks Yankel. Yankel walks in and he's ready to tell his tale. So you know what? As Yankel starts talking, Moshe says to himself, "One minute, I'm a rich man also." He's telling this to this philanthropist here, but I'm a rich man too. So you know what? He goes to the other side of the desk, sits down right next to the philanthropist, you know, puts his arm around him and says, "Yankel, tell us your story. We're both rich men. We can both help you. Tell us your story." He just got this guy has billions. He just got $500,000 from him, and all of a sudden now, it feels like, well, I'm also a rich man. I can also help you out. I'm right here next to him. We're going to help you out together. Isn't that pathetic? This guy just handed you $500,000. He just turned you from a pauper into a man who has means. Don't flaunt that in his presence. You want to be proud of the fact that all of a sudden you're a man of means. Leave his office. Leave his office. Go back home to your poor neighbors and there show off that all of a sudden you become a man of means and keep it a secret that you actually got it as a donation. But when you're actually standing in the presence of this man, don't present yourself as a rich man. Don't present yourself happily as, "Hey, he can help you. I'm also magnanimous. I can help you too." You just lower your head. You sit there quietly, humbly, And you know what? If he tells you, I want you to give him $10,000 also, you'll give it. But don't put yourself out there now. Now that you just got that help from him. Hey, I'm also a rich man. This is what humility is. If a person is keenly aware of the fact that everything he has was just goodness showered on him by Hashem, and now he's standing in Hashem's presence, are you ever going to express towards somebody else, well, I'm so much smarter than you? You're a beggar. You just got that handed to you by Hashem. And Hashem is right here now. You can express that to the other person. You just feel humbled. You just feel with your head bowed. It's a very sublime level of that keen awareness of Hashem's presence and everything that you got from him. And therefore, the Chavis HaVavis is telling us that's number one. One dynamic, one of the aspects of living with Hashem in a very real way and that keen awareness of everything that you're getting from him all the time is that you act humbly in his presence. And what can you do? You're always in Hashem's presence, which basically means that you're acting humbly all the time. So, he says you act submissively toward Hashem, and you also act humbly even when you're talking to other people. You're never going to talk too, you're not going to assert yourself too much. You're not going to put yourself out there. You'll always act with a certain soft spokenness, with a certain humility. Also, that's why, for example, it says in Halacha, a person should always walk with the head bowed a little bit. Get the head bowed a bit. Don't walk like that. Now, I don't know. I'm not getting into health issues right now, so it's important to keep your back straight. You can keep your back straight, but still, you don't have to have your nose pointing straight up. It says, because that is a conflict with a true realization of being in Hashem's presence. Okay. Then he moves on and says there are other dynamics also. There's another aspect of that. If you indeed have that sort of relationship with a very, very great king who is simply pouring goodness on you. So we come back to what we said before. You're going to be a fan of his. It's not just that you will treat him respectfully. You're going to be very excited about him. Let's say the name of that king comes up. You're proud of the fact that you're associated with this very, very great famous king, right? And B, you're very enthusiastic about him in general. And therefore, you'll be talking about him excitedly, right? Have you ever heard, sometimes you'll hear this, a person, let's say, had a teacher who they were especially close with, who really impacted them. And then somehow or the other, in some sort of social setting, at a pseudo something, that teacher comes up, the name of that teacher comes up, and this person will just start going on and on, right? This is the sort of dynamic that Hashem, that should stem from, again, a keen reality of Hashem, of the attention that he's paying you, the sort of relationship he has with you, makes you excited about him, and you want to share it with others also. You want to share it with others also. A person who has a very special relationship, let's say, with some famous gadol. When his name comes up in any sort of setting, this person will automatically be proudly telling about his experiences with this gadol. Or if you have a relationship with any sort of celebrity, right? You'll be very excited to talk about it and to share it. He says, once again, if you appreciate what the significance of a relationship with Hashem is, what the significance of the fact that he is showing you personal attention and personally caring for you will make you excited about him, will make you enthusiastic about him. And in any opportunity you'll have, you will talk about him excitedly. That's what Victor Miller often used to say. You know, when he would talk about, he would go on and on about the wonders of the eye, right? The wonders of an apple, the wonders of the watermelon, the wonders of a dandelion. He would go on and on about these things. And when he would talking about these things, he would say, I know, The people around you will look at you funny. The people around you will look at you funny. You'll bore them. But you know what? What can you do? You're a chassid. You're a chassid of Hashem, right? You're a devotee of him. And therefore, you are excited to talk about him. And Yerutzlav Vaidosa, again, I'm kind of like skipping and jumping here, not going through each detail, but we're trying to paint a picture here of a broad set of dynamics that stems from that very, very sensory awareness of Hashem's presence with you right now and everything that he's doing for you all the time and the significance of it. It's not like you have your own, you know, everybody has, Chalila, their own Hashem who's focused on, this is the Hashem who's running the entire universe and at the same time is busy focused on you in a personal way. If you appreciate that, you appreciate the privilege of this relationship, you appreciate the privilege of what it means that Hashem has that interest in you, then you are excited with any opportunity that you have to do something for him. I guess to give a mashal, I knew a fellow who had a talis that he very much cherished. He had a talis that he very much cherished. Why? He was once at a bris in his shul. After Shachris, there was a bris. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was the sandik. As Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky came in, he just looked around and he said, does anybody have a talis I can use? So everybody right away was excited to have that opportunity. Everybody preferred their talis. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky took this person's talis and he wore it for that sandikos. This person was so excited about that, he put that talis away and he only wore it on special occasions. He only wore it on special occasions. He was so proud of the fact that he had the opportunity to offer Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky a talis to use. Rabbi Yaakov actually took his talis. So if we are getting so much from Hashem all the time, and again, we appreciate the fact, the uncanny reality of the fact that he takes that personal interest in me from such a high place and is to look, appreciating our relative insignificance objectively, but it's not objective, it's subjective. Hashem decided he loves you intensely. You're very excited about the fact that you have that connection. And if you see that, oh, there's something I can do for him, you run to do it excitedly. Here he's introducing another fundamental dynamic. The Alter of Kelm used to talk about this at length. How the most exciting thing in the life of a true Oved Hashem is the opportunity to do something that he knows is pleasing Hashem. The most exciting thing is the knowledge that right now, what I'm doing now is making Hashem happy. It's pleasing Hashem. The knowledge that I pleased Hashem is really, for me, the high point of my life, even if I do it a number of times a day. Again, this comes from a developed awareness of the significance of the fact that Hashem has an interest in what you're doing. You know that the philosophers of old, this was their problem with Yiddishkeit. They, you know, if today we're contending with atheism, the philosophers of old, their problem wasn't atheism. They had a very, very profound appreciation of a God, to the extent that their problem with our faith was, how could it be that if you appreciate what God is, how could it possibly be that you would have a personal interest in what a human being is doing? But you know what? That is the astounding significance of our faith. The fact that Hashem, yes, came down to our lowly world and said, I do want a personal relationship with you, and you could give me nachas and please me through your actions. And therefore, when a person is really living with that awareness, that becomes the most exciting part of his life. Right now, I'm doing something that is attracting Hashem's attention and making him proud. And his main tefillah to Hashem is, Hashem, I want you to like me. I want you to be pleased with the things I'm doing. Now, I want to note something. Take again. the mashal of, let's say, you know, the kid who wants to be the teacher's pet. Many teachers will tell you about the kid who's really, really trying just to be the teacher's pet. And this kid will be calling the teacher all the time. And the kid will be always trying to sit near the teacher and to be sidling up next to the teacher and doing all kinds of things that will start really become irritating just to curry favor and to, you know, run to get the teacher a drink, even when the teacher already really doesn't want to drink anymore, and all kinds of things like that, because they want that attention and they want to be the one who's making the teacher happy. Right? Chavis Avavis is telling us now, you be that nudnik. Tell Hashem, please be happy with me. Imagine if you have, again, that dynamic. The student is coming and telling the teacher the whole time, do you like me? Do you like me? I really want you to like me. What can I do to make you like me? Well, what you can do is give me a little bit of space. Right, back off a little bit. But here he's telling us that, you know what? Hashem actually has nachas from that. Hashem actually has nachas from that. Hashem doesn't need the space. Hashem has nachas from the fact that you express to him, Hashem, I want to be closer to you. Hashem, please be happy with the things I'm doing. Right? We say at the end of Shemana Esrei, Yul lerotzo in imrei fi vehege in libi lefanecha. Hashem, I just daven from you, to you. Please be happy with the things I said. It gives Hashem nachas if we come and tell him, I want you to like me more. I want you to like what I'm doing for you. Please be pleased with, and we have all kinds of different feelings that express that before we do a mitzvah. Say, Hashem, please like my mitzvah. That actually does make Hashem, so to speak, kiviyachol, grow fonder of you. He's very happy to hear from you, and he's very happy to hear you nudging him and trying to get closer to him. The way the Chazon Ish expresses this is that when a Jew opens his mouth to talk to Hashem, it's like a beautiful harp playing in Hashem's ears. And the Chazon Ish is telling us, take advantage of that. Daven to Hashem, tell Hashem, you know, when you're doing mitzvahs, when you're going throughout your day, whatever it is, Hashem, please be happy with the things I'm doing. I'm making efforts for you now. Please be proud of it. V'yehaveihu, and love him. He's focused on you lovingly all the time. He never is distracted from you. Never removes his mind from you. So love him too. Focus on that. Focus on the fact that he is right now looking at you lovingly. By the way, it's an important thing to remember. We always talk about Hashem is constantly watching us. Sometimes that can have a certain threatening sound to it. And you know what? We should be very careful not to be stepping out of line because of the fact that Hashem is watching us. But remember that actually that watching is a very loving watch. He's looking at you lovingly and caringly. But you still have to remember who he is and not step out of line. But feel that love at any given moment. Feel that love and feel that love for him too. The Gra says that, you know, you often wonder, how are you supposed to develop love? How do you decide to love somebody? We have a command to love Hashem. And I remember as a kid, right? I remember a brother and sister of mine got into a fight. So my sister yelled, I hate you. So my brother punched her hard and said, now do you like me? She said, no, I hate you even more. He punched her even harder. Now do you love me? Kept on punching her until finally she said, yes, 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 I love you. Right? So how can you command someone to love? I tell you, I want you to love me. How can you command someone to love? You can't command it. But the Gra says this point. The Gra says love comes from focusing on the fact that that person loves you so much. I come back to the mashal of a dynamic with a teacher. Think of the kid who is told secretly, be it by a friend, be it by some other teacher, whatever it is, you know, this teacher, Miss So-and-so, she told me that she really likes you. Oh, now all of a sudden the kid really likes the teacher. That is one of the easiest ways to come to love is the knowledge that the other person loves you. So when Hashem is saying, I expect you to love me, what he's actually saying is, I want you to keep yourself aware of how much I love you, of how much you mean to me, of how focused I am on you. And if we focus on that and think about that, again, the love will be a natural dynamic. And we move on. The Chovis HaLavavos' description. Part of that will come the concern that I really do want to constantly be pleasing him. I'm scared of reaching a place where Hashem will be disappointed in me. And I want to say that this is a type of fear. When we talk about fear of Hashem, this is probably the most ideal type of fear that can exist in a relationship. This is actually a very healthy kind of fear that can exist between spouses and can exist between children and parents. What fear is that? The fear of disappointing the other person. The other person means so much to me. I so much appreciate what the other person is in my life, and I'm scared to do something that will disappoint the person. It gives fear a whole different meaning. It gives a fear a whole different meaning. Spouses who are deeply in love and something comes up. I'll give you an actual story that I heard said about this. I'm sorry, just a minute. There was a woman whose son was in, I don't know, fourth grade, fifth grade, and his class was having a very special seal. And he came home and he asked his mother if she can make a special cake for the seal. And his mother was very busy. There was a lot going on. She actually was she was one of these artistic bakers who knew how to make these very, very fancy cakes. She heard, and she kind of put it, made a mental note of it. Let's see if I can make a cake for my kid for tomorrow. And at the same time, there was also going to be a birthday party in her office for her boss the next day. And here she really did want to make a cake. She wanted to make a cake that would wow her boss and that would wow her colleagues. So it was a busy day, and she finally got the kids to bed at night, and then she decided she was really going to put her efforts into making a cake that would really wow everybody. And she spent hours. And she made a cake. I don't know to describe it exactly, with the different layers and all the fancy things on it. And use your imagination. You'll probably do a better job picturing it than I will. But one of these really fancy, impressive cakes. She's exhausted. She's ready to collapse in bed. And all of a sudden, she remembers her son's request. She really doesn't have koyach, but okay, her son's having a seal tomorrow. She quickly throws together something and smeared on some icing, kind of like to be yoytze. Not who knows how impressive, but okay, it'll do. And she puts both cakes into the fridge, collapses in bed, very, very late at night already. She collapses in bed. Slept late the next morning. Her son got up all early, all excited. Gets himself ready for school. He wanted to see, did his mother make a cake? He asked her last night. He didn't know what ended up happening. He opens the fridge. What does he see? Whoa, what a sight. That beautiful, impressive, magnificent cake is sitting in the fridge and he can't believe it. His mother, Mamish, went all out for his siyum. He takes the cake out of the fridge, didn't even notice the other cake. Takes the cake out of the fridge very gingerly and very, very carefully and proudly takes it to Cheder, and he was the center of attention. He was the center of attention that day. He comes in and all the kids gather around all admiringly, and the Rebbe makes a whole big deal about it. And the principal is talking about it, and the Rebbeim from the other classes hear about it. And his cake really put him at center stage. Meanwhile, his mother finally wakes up. She wakes up late. She has to get out to the office, pulls herself together, and she goes to the fridge to take out the cake that she had baked. Opens the fridge, and oh boy, what does she see there? The cake is gone. And what's there? The chlop-lop cake that she had made for her son, Siyum. Doesn't take her a minute to figure out what had happened. What is she going to do now? Obviously, her son came and took the beautiful cake to his Siyum. Her first thought was to go to the school and like to switch the cakes. And then she thought to herself, "Hey, he's all excited. I'm going to go there and take it away from him." She was mamish at a loss. She was mamish torn. And in the end, she very, very, well, kind of resentfully decided, okay, I'm not going to, he already took it. What can I do? Either she took the other cake or she didn't take the other cake, whatever. Kid comes home from school and he says, he's so grateful. He comes home with the little leftovers that are left of the cake. And he's so grateful. He says, "Mommy, thank you so much for that beautiful cake that you made for me. And everyone in the cheder was so excited about it. And my thing was the best thing from everybody's." And she like makes a tight-lipped smile. And she manages to croak out, "My pleasure. Anything for you." Well, and she swallows and moves on. The birthday party was long forgotten. The siyum was long forgotten, or almost. The years go by, and this kid is struggling. He falls in with the wrong crowd. And one thing leads to the next, and there's all kinds of things going on, extracurricular activities, after-hour activities. And the kid is not in a good place. And the parents are half aware, half not aware. And then it reaches a point where these guys, a real group of rebels, decide that they are going to get together. They're not even going to inform their parents. And they are going to, they all bought tickets to fly to I don't know where. They're flying together to who knows where. They're not even going to tell their parents about it. Their parents will worry. It's too bad. They deserve it. And they have this plan. They're all going to meet at the airport. Yes, they're already over 18. I don't know what it was. They're all going to meet at the airport and they're going to fly together as a group, and their parents will find out about it when they find out about it. And this kid is part of the group. And he arrives at the airport in the middle of the night with the other kids. They're all supposed to be sleeping. The parents don't even know what's going on. And as they're ready to really start the partying, the kid just decides, "I can't do it. I can't do it." He leaves the group, goes back home, creeps back into bed, wake up in the morning. Nobody knows what happened. And ultimately, it comes out what this group had done. Obviously caused the parents a lot of anguish. And somehow or the other, this kid's parents figured out that he actually was going to be one of the group, but he did not join the trip. And he's talking to his parents about it, and he told his mother, "You know what it was?" He said, "As I was in the airport, ready to actually take off, the thought that hit me was, I remembered that cake that you made for my siyum." He never knew the true story. But he said, "I remembered that magnificent cake that you had made, and I decided, I can't do this to you. I can't hurt you like that. After that dedication that you showed, after that dedication that you showed, I can't do this to you. I can't hurt you like that. And that's why I came home. We can just try to imagine the continuation of the story of the feelings that this mother felt. That we leave up to each of our own imagination. But the point that I'm getting to, the point that I'm trying to get out of this, is this concept of this kid was hit with a certain fear. He was already past the age of being scared that when my parents discover, they're going to hit me with the belt. It's past that age. And this is all something for us parents to keep in mind. The kids will hit that age. You want the kid to feel beholden to you when he's already past the age of being scared. What are you going to do to him? What fear will hold the kid in place when he's bigger and stronger than you and plenty independent? The fear that will hold him in place is the fear of letting you down. And that fear comes from feelings that you believe in him, that you love him, and that'll create that fear. That's a very, very healthy fear. That's already a whole different kind of fear. And this is the fear that the Chavos HaLevavos is talking about now. He says, you're scared of letting Hashem down after all that he's invested in you in terms of his belief in you, in terms of his attentions to you. You want to justify that belief. I want to, so to speak, compensate with that belief in terms of the dedication, in terms of the loyalty that I'm showing to Hashem now. And it's a different kind of fear that I'm experiencing now, a new translation of Yirah Shamayim. It's the fear of Hashem being disappointed in me. Okay, we're in middle here. We'll continue next week in Mitzvah Hashem. But again, just to cap it up, is that we are describing the full picture of the fully developed dynamic, all the different aspects, facets of the dynamic of a person who's living with that keen awareness, not only of being in Hashem's presence, but of being in Hashem's presence and being constantly showered with Hashem's attention and goodness. We'll end here for this week. Everyone, have a wonderful and healthy week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.